This podcast is brought to you by Men's Tee Clinic. Men's Tee Clinic is the team I trust with my total wellness optimization, and so should you. Five DFW locations with North Frisco, El Dorado Parkway at Dallas North Tollway now open. Call 972-GO-MEN'S-TEE or visit menstclinic.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
All right, so Mike McCarthy talked yesterday, and I thought there were some revealing things about, A, the kind of team that he wants to have, B, the players that he would like back. Kevin, it seems as if, you know, we discussed Amari Cooper yesterday being a player that he wants to have back, and I'm curious as to the reason about it. But, you know, one of the things about it that I really liked is it seems like he likes guys that see the game better, that understand the game.
Okay. Do you mean understand? Because I'm curious, are those two different things?
He likes guys that are various in what they see. And yes, I do absolutely mean see.
Okay.
Because they understand the concepts rather than the routes. The reason you're doing something, like, you want a player that knows why they're doing something, because then they can change why they're doing it to something else and make it their own if they see something's not working. You know, like, I think that's a really important thing. And I think we'll get into that a little more in just a few minutes. But here's Mike McCarthy, and let's go to cut four here, Shippy. When you're looking at the draft, how important will it be to bring in players that are comfortable in your system?
Yes, it's important to be very aware of the system that the player that you bring into your program, where he's come from. You know, I've coached receivers that you know, during their college career, they just, you know, looked over to the sideline and they ran one of five routes. So, you know, that's all part of a normal adjustment into the league. And I think your point is well taken. But those are things you can learn from as a coach, and how you can use some of those thoughts and ideas, signals, as part of your two-minute and no-huddle offense.
And then he talked a little bit about Kellen Moore and the play calling and what their plan is there.
I have a new job, so I get to start over and take all those never again statements back. But I think when you just look at the big picture, you know, these decisions that I'm making, particularly early in my tenure, I've had a lot of time to think about it. I've had a chance to study the opportunities that were in front of me for quite some time. And Dallas was the one opportunity that was something I felt was important to keep the current offense in place because of the success that they've had in the past. You know, the productivity on offense is very high. So there will always be things that are different. I think anytime you have a coaching change, that's obvious. Our approach to offense will change. The design of how we put things together will be different, but it's important to build off of the successful concepts and particularly the language that's in place. I'm excited to work with Kellen, and I've really enjoyed our meetings. So I really like the way he looks at the game.
What do you think is going to change this season with the way that Kellen Moore and his job, what his job's going to be this year?
Well, I'll just say he doesn't have to go off of Jason Garrett's playbook. I mean,
because everyone thought that he was being held down.
Scott
Linehan
had to go off of Jason Garrett's playbook. As much as we can complain about Scott Linehan before Moore, and Scott Linehan might have had bad relationships with his offensive players. That could be true without Jason Garrett having any influence there. But this whole time that Jason Garrett has been here, from offensive coordinator to head coach, 10-plus years, it's been Jason Garrett's system, and always has been Jason Garrett's system. We did see some things mixed into Jason Garrett's system last year, but now Jason Garrett's system is 100% thrown out. Now, there might be things that Mike McCarthy and Kellen Moore liked from that system, some things.
But you're not beholden to all.
Right, but we don't have to be 100% Jason Garrett's offense. It might be 25% Jason Garrett's offense. It might stay 60% Jason Garrett's offense. But we now know that Kellen Moore will at least have freedom that he had almost zero of with Jason Garrett there.
And I wonder how much of that is like just because the nature of Jason Garrett, the nature of his offense was conservative, right? Like it sure. just, it seemed like he, we're going to control the ball. This is my philosophy. I'm not changing off of it.
Yeah.
And it seems like Mike McCarthy's mindset is more, what do they suck at and how can I expose it?
Right. Well, here's what's very tough about Jason Garrett. And I'll give him this excuse. I don't think he's a good coach at all, but I'll give him this excuse. Damn. When he made it to the NFL and his dad was scouting for the NFL team that he was on, they were like, we have 12 plays. Here they are. We don't care if the defense knows what we're doing. We will execute them and we will win. And you know what Jason Garrett saw? He saw that exact plan work out to championships. So then when he became a coach with Miami and then here with Dallas and then head coach, his whole philosophy was built off the 92-95 Dallas Cowboys.
Yep.
It doesn't matter if the other team knows what you're doing. If you execute it and everybody does their job, if our 11 beats their 11, we win a championship. And so he's never gone away from that philosophy of championship football from 92-95 that he was a part of.
No, I think you're right. And I've always hated that philosophy when the personnel aren't in place to execute it. And you're like, it'll be fine either
way. And to his point, when we talk to Michael Irvin, when Michael Irvin comes on here for years and he would say, look, this is a man beat man offense. This is stay in front of your guy for 3 seconds as a blocker and you get $300 million. Michael Irvin has trouble understanding the other ways of offense, right? Because he's just like, look, I was on a dynasty, and on the dynasty, you beat your guy. The offensive line does their job. The quarterback does his. The running back does his. The tight end does his, and you win championships. It's a simple philosophy, guys. Like, how can we not do this? It's like, well, the problem is there's a salary cap. The problem is we're not drafting nearly. We don't have 1,000 picks because of a Herschel Walker trade.
Yep.
So we're in a situation where you have to have a smart football person running the team, and we decided to go with just a smart person, but not a football person.
The one of the other things, and I just sent this over to Shippy because this was one of the cuts I was really interested in, is, Kevin, I keep bringing up the veteran squad comment this morning. This is one of the things he said about having a veteran squad.
Well, I think, you know, when you talk about needs, you can't have enough good football players. And I always point to my past experience in 2010. 2010, it took 77 players to win a Super Bowl. So I've never really, you know, I'm not a believer in you're one player away or two players away from winning a championship. So you want to have as many veterans as you possibly can. I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to coach a more experienced football team. That rookie class is so important, and really bringing that veteran group and that rookie class together is really where the really good teams take a big step, particularly in November. So just paying attention more to those types of things and making sure that how we install and how we lay out this off-season program, we're able to get the veterans up to snuff, but more importantly, when that rookie orientation, when that new group comes in, that we can get these guys meshed as fast as we can.
Now, Kevin, he said 77 players to win a Super Bowl. They have a 53-man roster. So obviously, though, but what's going to happen? You're going to have injuries at some point.
Yep.
Sometimes you're going to have a guy that you might go, this guy's going to have a huge impact this week. He might have a huge impact for 3 games. But you know what? He's not really that useful for the rest of the season to us.
Which is fine.
Or down this playoff stretch, because it's just not a good matchup for us. So just that vision of, look, we don't have to hang with a guy just because we have him. Like Brett Maher, they stuck with him because they felt like they had to.
Yeah, and Jason Witten, they brought him back because they felt like if he's available, you can't not take him.
Yeah.
That's not a viable option. Chris Jones, they stuck with him because he's on the team. Like, so many times I felt like we stuck with people because we're like, well, I mean, they're on the team.
Yeah.
Cool. You know you can make roster moves and stuff like that. No, the roster moves are only for the bottom of the roster. No, they're not.
You constantly turn that thing because it's constantly evolving. And I know it's great. Like, you don't want to let go of elite players. You just don't want to do that because elite players week in, week out should be performing at a certain level. But, man, if there is a guy that's a bit player or a role player, you don't just hold them in your pocket You use him whenever he's useful, but if you don't have a use for him again that season, you can find another one the next season.
I get the where sports has gone, and you don't want to yell and cuss at your players a lot because it's just not the way to get through the majority of the players nowadays. And I get where Jimmy Johnson would maybe cut random guys that didn't mean much. But most of the players, what you guys are talking about, yeah, you do have elite guys. You usually only have like four elite guys on your team.
Yep.
And then maybe you have another seven guys that are getting paid a lot that there's nothing you can do. You can't release those guys because of contract. Like, for example, you can't release Jalen Smith. It doesn't matter how bad he is or going to be. You can't. He's on the team for at least two more years. But the majority of those 50 to 77 guys on your team are bit role players.
Yep.
And when you release one of them, when after 2 weeks in a row that person did not do their job and you call them into the office in week five of the NFL season because you're on a two-game losing streak and they're not helping, they're actually hurting, and you say, hey, we're sorry, we're getting rid of you, you've had a really bad 2 weeks, you're not getting our system, whatever it is, there's a lot of the team that now is like, oh, S, I need to get on my game. I need to make sure that I know everything because I haven't had a good 2 weeks. And I might be, if I have another bad week, that's 3 weeks. That's another week that I get to be on this team that my buddy over there is not getting to be on the team anymore. He's out of the NFL right now because of those bad 2 weeks. And if I don't get my stuff together, I'm probably next. And there might be 5 to 7 guys on your team that think that day that person is released, you're going to get more out of that guy. I'm not saying you just randomly, but yes, that's the way you do it without screaming and yelling and calling them names.
I agree with that.
And Jason Garrett didn't believe in that. He believed if you made the team out of training camp, then you're a Cowboy that whole season.
That's what you earned. All right, and then Kevin, about Amari and Randall Cobb, this is what he had to say on the importance of having them back.
I think definitely. I mean, the goal is to have both those guys back. And, you know, just, you know, Amari, I thought he, you know, having a chance to get through all the tape as a staff, you know, he did a lot of great things on tape. And really looks like he's in sync with Dak. And I'd even say Randall even more so. I was very impressed with Randall last year. I mean, he was banged up a couple of years prior to that, but I thought he had a heck of a season in Dallas last year. I was very impressed with his video.
So obviously, Kevin, like I've been saying, they've had to watch film on all these guys to get through it. But here's that concepts part that I was talking about with you that I think you're really going to like. I look for that in players, guys that can come in and tell you everything about the play, regardless of the position, and they're proactive with it, and they're on it all the time. That mindset and that ability is what you want because that makes the defense play, like you said, are we going to play him in a base? Are we going to play him in a sub? Offensive football, there's either two backs, one back, or no back. I mean, conceptually, that's the way I've always thought it. When your players learn it that way, they see the big picture. They don't learn plays, they learn concepts. It makes them play faster. Also, those things are things that you look for at this time. That's why I keep going back. You don't even have to have good players, especially guys that can play multiple positions. Randall is the perfect example of that because I would always put Randall in the backfield. I did a lot more with him behind the line of scrimmage, but I thought he played great in the slot and did some things as a single receiver, but he could do anything out on the field. And Kevin, when you say a guy that goes into a play and doesn't just know his assignment, he knows everybody's assignment on the field. He can be more productive because he can see things that are about to happen for somebody else and make something else happen. Just like Amari Cooper deciding that he saw that safety, kept doing that, and Dak, you need to throw this, but Dak was like, but that's not the play.
I don't know if I'll eventually change my mind over time, but I have to say how
you're
just...
You're falling in love, aren't you?
No. Oh. But I do think it's refreshing that he didn't say, well, he's just a quality football player, you know, or he didn't say, well, you know, he's part of the reason we excel at all three phases. I think I just really love that he's like,
depth.
Hey, do you want a whole bunch of specifics about this actual player that you asked the question about? Here are the specifics for the specific player that you specifically asked about. And not just, I mean, you could rinse and repeat every single answer, copy and paste.
And hey, how do you plan to go up against these guys? Well, we got to execute part of the process. You know, that's what that was.
Yes.
And now he's sitting there laying out, we have to see the plays. We have to do these things. These are part of what makes us the fibers of our team, not just, hey, the foundation's already built. We just go win now.
What can make coaches from good to great, to me, is when they can take a person that's lesser than the person lining up against them whatever sport it is.
Yep.
And they can make that person better than that person on that given day.
So like what Doug Peterson did for the division?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Who are we?
Congrats on the love, by the way, Kevin.
Huh?
Congrats on the love.
Oh.
Corey said you were in love.
Yeah, you're in love with Mike McCarthy now.
Okay, well, I don't know about all of that.
But Doug Peterson, his whole approach was we're going to go have ice cream afterwards.
I could see that.
Remember, he was just like, ice cream. Don't forget, afterwards, after you guys watch this film, ice cream. I'm treating y'all to ice cream.
That's what Bassick does to encourage us. He's like, do you want me to get pizza? And he's like, yeah, I know. Those guys will love it.
Look at Shippy, man.
Yeah. I'm motivated AF over here.
Yeah.
We're the KHC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, Luca and KP are gelling, and it appears to be spectacular. Are you pumped? Talk about it next right here on The Fan.
We're back here on the KHC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan for your lunch break. Everybody loves a good lunch, Kevin.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Are the Mavs getting the D from the refs is the question I want to know the answer to.
What and we'll does get, that mean?
Are
they playing defense?
Mike, you're probably, no.
They did steal the ball a couple times last night from the Mavericks.
I don't understand what's happening. I do understand what's happening. And I told y'all, I warned y'all about this the other day. Mark Cuban saying what he said is going to become a problem because, and I don't understand, we've seen it already. In his tenure as the owner of this team, he was so critical that it essentially cost the Mavericks championships, opportunities to get championships. Because, and Kevin, I go back to 2006, if you go back to that time, they may have been okay with Mark Cuban and the Mavericks sweeping the Heat if Mark Cuban was the type of owner they wanted him to be. But because the NBA came through and was like, we can't let this be a sweep, then that happens. And you contend that if Dirk had won that one, he would have won multiple.
No. Oh, yes.
Because at that point,
the confidence.
And because people would have wanted to jump on with him at that point. Okay. By the time he won, he was too old for people to be like, that's the guy I need to build with.
But even still, how difficult was it to get to that point simply because, and Dirk had to at some point say to Mark Cuban, hey, can you kind of shut up just a little bit because they're kind of getting mad. Because you remember the season, Mark Cuban grew his beard out, he pouted, but he never said anything, and the Mavericks win a championship.
Yeah, the tough thing about that is you don't 100% know. I'm sure that Dirk didn't 100% know that some of these BS calls are because of Mark Cuban, but because it was in the mind of Dirk Nowitzki, probably the mind of other players on the team, that they're just like, if you're quiet, let's just see what happens. Maybe we are still going to feel like we're not getting the benefit of the doubt on the close calls, and we feel like if we do this to them, it's a foul. If they do it to us, it's not a foul.
Yep.
Let's just see if you're quiet,
This will help. Yeah.
We've only had one game since the blow-up of Mark Cuban after the Atlanta Hawks loss, and we saw that it changed. I felt like last night, Luka shot the ball 25 times. Luka, I'm so happy about this. His ankle looked good last night, right? I was worried that it was going to be a 50-50 proposition if he played. He ended up playing, and he looked very healthy during the game. But 25 shots, 4 free throw attempts. And I don't know. This is where I just don't know. I don't know. Is that because Luka complained so much that these three refs were tired of it and sick of it, and they weren't going to call when his thumb almost got broken? That was a scary point late in the first quarter where I thought he might have broke his thumb when he went back to the training room. And then he got fouled a couple other times that were obvious calls, and they weren't called. And I was like, is that because Luka complains too much, or is that the now norm for the rest of this season for the Dallas Mavericks and Luka Doncic, because the refs are like, hey, you called all of us out. We are not going to call anything that we can get away with. We are going to get away with it now.
I still think it's probably Cuban because there's more of a track record there. And now that he's spoken up, maybe. And you know what? Maybe there's referees around the game that they've been there for a long time and they've been waiting to get back at him. They're like, man, I know other people screwed you over, but I didn't get my chance because you ran your mouth about me a lot.
And I know he feels like he has to protect Luka, you know, in that relationship of I'm going to go to bat for you no matter what. I'm always in your corner. I get that part of it. And I know he wants, sometimes he wants to win. And he feels like, he even said it, look, I really think we stand a good chance of winning this appeal with the Atlanta Hawks game. That's great. You won one game in the regular season.
Yeah.
Did you win the battle? Yeah. Did you win the war? Probably not, because what's going to ultimately happen is they're going to come back on you for it. Now, that's a very small piece of what this season is. The big piece, though, is the piece that that Saad has done. And Saad Youssef did the piece on Luka and Kristaps Porzingis. And Mike, you went through every inch of this piece.
I did.
And it's very strong on the content of how Luka and Kristaps are finally coming together, Kevin.
And if you want another example from last night, just the combined stat line for the two, 54 points, 22 rebounds, 15 assists, and 3 blocks.
It's happening.
It's awesome.
They are becoming an unbelievable combination, and I know it's early to say that because in the article it talks about they've played in 36 games together out of the 59 because there's just been time where they have missed. Yeah. So it's only been 36 out of 59 games that they've been together. And those first 23 games were bad together, really bad together.
Which is where everyone started panicking, right?
But what happened is after those 23 games, Luka went out for 5 games with an injury.
Yep.
And that's when Porzingis, according to the article, Saad Youssef, and they use a G League coach in it, to kind of talk about more of their offense and why it is the most successful offense in the NBA. But to get back to the point, is that's when Porzingis gained his confidence. Because Porzingis, even though they weren't saying it, it was a lack of confidence somewhat because he was playing in a new system, asking him to do new things, hadn't been playing for 20 months. Now he's not the main guy. He's working off of a superstar. And all those things were causing problems for Porzingis. And then
do you view this as, not that you ever wanted Luka to get hurt, but in the grand scheme, it was a necessary evil that
they're saying in the article, and I agree with it. Yes. The best thing that happened in the 2019-20 season is Luka has been hurt twice, because in those times, that's when Porzingis has shined.
Yeah.
Got his confidence. Okay. And now we're seeing, after having to play some games without Luka, using Porzingis as the main guy, he can still go out there and get you close to 30 points. He is now a really good rebounder. He is a good, he was a below average rebounder with the New York Knicks his whole career. And now he's an above average rebounder. And it doesn't talk about rebounding so much in the article, but it just talks about, it starts off of how bad they were together. And then Luka got hurt. And then Luka got hurt again. And through that, Porzingis gained his confidence. And now we're also seeing in the article, it talks about how Porzingis is saying, look, it's just taking time, but we're going to keep getting better and better. And the communication's there. And we want to be great together. And we're getting there. And it's going to keep getting better.
How important is that last part that he said, we're going to be great together?
Yeah.
That is so...
When you've watched the last 3 or 4 games of this, when they've been on the court together, so you take out the Atlanta game because they both didn't play, this is one of the best combinations in the NBA. For the first half of the season, the first 40 games, we could say Luka's one of the 5 best players in the NBA. And there can be arguments there, but 5 best offensive players, there's no argument. He's one of the 5 best offensive players in the game. He's in the MVP candidacy. But you couldn't say at all, nobody could say Porzingis and Luka is one of the best 1-2 combinations in the NBA. You said, no, they're not. He said Porzingis shined when Luka was out, and then Luka came back and he looked bad again, as in like not what we wanted to see from when Luka was out. It's only been recently that now you can start saying Porzingis and Luka. I think you can put them in the same as LeBron and Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. Yes, are those guys better with a better record, with more experience? Yes, I'm not saying they're there yet, but I think now we can start having conversations. When you look at the 1-2 combinations in the NBA that you really like, I think now we can start talking about Luka and Porzingis in that conversation.
Not health-wise, though, right? And that's your skepticism, right, Kevin, is Kristaps' health.
Yes.
Like everything revolves around, can he play a season with him?
100% about that. And just real quick.
Skill, because the skill exists.
Oh, well, the skill is there. But, we talked about it. The whole reason he was available is because, I know he'd burned a lot of bridges in New York, too. But the whole reason he was available is because they did not seem to believe long term in his health. But I think you're, and that's why I'm still kind of holding out, because, you know, he did already miss some time with a knee. I know it's a different issue, but still, that makes me a little nervous. I'm curious, okay, real quick, do you put Giannis and Middleton in there? Because Middleton's a damn, yes, good player too.
Yes. Now, he's probably, you know, Middleton's an all-star, not a superstar.
But he's as good as Kristaps.
Right. Well, in a way, in, yes, a different... I think Porzingis can be way better than, okay, Middleton. Like, what Middleton's career has been and going to be, I believe Porzingis
can be better.
Can be, I'm going to say, way better. And I'm not saying Middleton is very good. Don't get me wrong. But right now, would you, for next year, and I know for long term you'd rather have Porzingis, but for next year, would you change out Porzingis for Middleton? If you're a Mavs fan, no, would you say, I'd rather have Middleton next year than Porzingis, because I think Middleton's better, going to be better next year than Porzingis?
Huh. I'd, no,
look,
I
at that A&M brain working right now.
I know.
Now.
I think I would, because, woo, I would feel confident he'd be out there every game.
Okay, I,
you know,
hear,
like,
you Kristaps on the health.
Has never played a full, okay, season.
All right.
Where he stayed healthy, Middleton does.
All right, what about the playoffs, though?
This playoffs?
No, next year's playoffs.
Yeah, that's a really good question.
I, as much as I love the regular season and seeding and everything, the legacy of Luka is only going to rely now on what he does in the playoffs. So who gives me a better chance in the playoffs?
I
would say let Porzingis play in these 4 to 6 games he's going to get in the playoffs, because that, I think, is going to mean a lot to Porzingis playing next year in the playoffs. I know it sounds weird, but because these guys have never played in a playoff game ever, that we're going to need to see them play on that stage to get a better idea. Because remember when it first happened for Dirk? Dirk was horrible in Utah the first 2 games in 2001. They were blown out. Everybody looked horrible. And then they came back to Dallas and started showing what we saw in the 2000-2001 season. And then we got to Utah, and Dirk's in bad foul trouble. They look horrible again at halftime. And then Dirk shines, and obviously Finley makes a great pass to Calvin Booth, and then they go on, they kind of get rolled up by San Antonio. But then there are moments in the San Antonio series where Dirk looks like a superstar, and we're like, okay, Dirk's on his way to superstar status. We saw it somewhat in the regular season. Now we know it from what we just saw him do against Malone and Stockton and what he just did against Duncan. And if we get that from Porzingis in his playoff run this year, where we see 2 or 3 games where he looks dominant in the playoffs, then I want Porzingis for sure.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably fair. And based on current trajectory, if they continue to gel at this rate, then obviously I'll go with the person that I know is going to work with Luka, as opposed to the person that I don't know in Middleton.
Well, you also don't like Luka, so you're trying. You hope
that is not true.
This is a little bit contradictory in the article, but this is something that I have noticed. This was from Tim McMahon's article. I'm taking this for this. Tim McMahon's not in this article, but when he talked about the Mavericks don't believe in posting up and all that stuff, that hasn't been true recently. And here is why. This is, and I'm sorry, I'm probably going to say his last name wrong. Galanopoulos is the article where he is a G League coach for Frisco.
Oh, okay.
And he's breaking down the offense. So he's part of the Mavericks overall staff, not the Dallas Mavericks staff, but he's working G League. And he says,
a J-Lo movie?
They like to post up Luka because he doesn't take these fadeaway shots and avoid contact. Luka posts up to embrace contact to get fouled because he's got a mismatch. And it talks about the posting up now happening in the Mavericks system. And it's really to get 3-point looks, to hit cutters. Porzingis is now posting up. It's not so much for those guys to score off of their post-up mid-range game, but they have added the post-up in their game. They're posting up. It says the Mavericks registered 10 post-up plays leading to scoring attempts against the Kings' small lineup. So if a team wants to go small on the Mavs, and let's just say you haven't been paying a lot of attention to, but you heard the Tim McMahon article that the Mavericks don't believe in posting up, and that was pretty much confirmed by Rick Carlisle in a post-game interview.
Yes, and I remember that.
They do like posting up in this article, and they are posting up. If you put a little guy on Porzingis because he has more confidence in his game, passing out of the post, taking the ball to the rack out of the post, and you put a little guy on Luka, they actually do run post-up stuff now. And it's part of their offense is posting up.
Okay, I'm interested in a name that I saw pop up here on the Fantex a couple of times, and we've talked so much about Bradley Beal. I hadn't even really considered this person, and I think they're out of contract. Would adding DeMar DeRozan do anything for you in terms of continuing to push the contender status? Because the whole reason I'm curious about this is, look, if they're starting to gel, you see this thing moving towards the top. But if they still need something else, I would say.
Pretty much for nothing, I would add DeMar DeRozan. If in the offseason you can get him for very little to nothing, I would do it.
No love for DeMar DeRozan. I know he can't shoot the three,
That's my problem is I want the ball in Luka's hands a lot. I don't mind DeMar DeRozan. We saw what he can do, especially driving to the basket, his mid-range game, and those are valuable. Kawhi Leonard just won a championship, and his best trait is his mid-range game. And he does other things. He takes the ball to the basket, finishes around the basket. He can shoot the three. We obviously saw that in the All-Star game. But the mid-range game isn't totally dead. If you are just awesome at executing it in Kawhi Leonard's way or DeMar DeRozan, what we saw last night, I don't mind having you. But what is tough, when you go through this article, it's on The Athletic from Saad Youssef, they go through and they show some offensive sets that get Tim Hardaway and Dorian Finney-Smith and other guys, whether it's wide open threes or wide open layups. If you have a guy like DeMar DeRozan on the court and you give him the ball where some of these guys are getting the ball, it could make it more difficult for him to score in the Maverick system than in the Spurs system, because Luka would be like, here's your pass, shoot it. I've collapsed the defense. And if you want to recollapse the defense, they're already all in the paint. Yeah, I brought them all here.
Yeah.
And so he has to make, or he has to at least take it and make it, really.
And he probably will not. Now, this might be something for a future segment. What do you think Kristaps' ceiling is in the league in this system? Like, could he be top 15, top 10? Maybe we'll pick that up another day.
Yeah, you said the correct number there.
Okay. We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next. Oh, my God. I'm looking at that clock, and I do believe it's about time for Baseball Nuggets.
Well, if you thought we traded for the injured player in the Kluber trade, we didn't.
Next on The Fan.
Back here on the KNC Masterpiece on 105.3 The Fan. Just got an email from YouTube TV that they're dropping their Fox Sports regional content. With
Whoa.
That
out there. YouTube TV.
I got to go. That's the reason that I got it.
Yeah.
I mean, they have lots of sports. I love that.
Did you have PlayStation View?
I didn't. I'd never bought PlayStation View, but
that was
I was
the
going
best.
To. But I saw it, and I was like, wow, this is good. Because whenever I called Direct was like, hey, don't worry about it, man. We'll give you a discount. You can pay what you would pay for PlayStation View. So I was like, oh, sweet. I'll just keep the stuff I have there. Well, then I made the switch over to YouTube TV, and now they're jacking me from this. I don't have Stars. I don't have Mavs. I don't have Rangers. That's screwed up, man.
Yeah. Now, when is this happening? Not tonight.
February 29th.
Oh,
well, okay.
Wow.
Well, we're switching from YouTube TV in the next 2 days.
Good Lord. So fast.
Yeah. So thanks a lot, YouTube TV. And people are pissed right now. Go look at Twitter. There are people that are furious. So I don't know what to do, man. I don't know what to do. Maybe cable's going to have to make a comeback.
This is amazing that I pretty much vouched to never go back to that, but I think I might have to. I think they're pushing me the way that PlayStation View left and now YouTube TV, which they already didn't have the NFL Network, which was tough. I was just like, this stinks, but it does have everything else that I need.
Yeah.
I'll just sacrifice not having the NFL Network to have everything else I need.
Yeah.
And I'm just, because if we jump to something else, Corey, they're just going to take away something. Fox Sports Southwest to me is the most important channel that I have because of what you just named. The three out of our four teams play on that channel. And so I have to have that channel. Out of all the other channels, that's the number one channel that I need.
Does it seem like it's Fox Sports that is the problem then? Because it happens on every network.
Didn't Dish have a major problem with Fox Sports?
Direct
Southwest?
Will drop them sometimes.
Yeah,
Dish did have.
And is that still even going?
I
knew it was going for a really long time.
So, I don't know. Just fix this S, Rich.
Are you guys going to replug the plug?
I guess I got to recable. I got to.
Yeah.
Is that
I have,
record?
I have like Spectrum for my internet. So,
you can get a sweet package deal.
So I think I'm going to probably call them up and see. The one thing that I don't want is I don't want a yearly subscription, because when stuff like this happens, like for YouTube, at least the good thing is on these things, you pay a monthly fee, not a yearly fee.
Yeah.
Where you're locked in or you have to pay $200 to get out of it, is that we can just now, tonight, tomorrow, Corey, we just drop YouTube TV. We cancel our subscription and then we move on to our next thing. And I hate that you have to have these yearly, really 2-year deals where you, 1 year you have a good price. The next year we really screw you over and there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. People are suggesting go with Hulu.
Looking at it right now.
That seems to be the prevailing.
I'm just you're missing one thing from Hulu that you got with YouTube TV, and I can't remember what
it was.
Is it
ESPN?
Maybe, but I might even have that with my Disney Plus. So.
And people are rolling in and saying that Dish still doesn't have Fox Sports.
All so if you want to be mad at somebody, apparently it's Sinclair and YouTube TV who are unable to reach a deal.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Sinclair.
No problem.
Isn't that the guy from...
Be careful there. Sinclair.
No, that's
Sinbad
if you're thinking about the comedian.
Politics stuff, too.
Mic off.
Oh, thanks a lot, Kevin. All right, now it's time for Baseball Nuggets with Mike Bacsik.
Okay, so Corey Kluber trade. We talked about Corey Kluber earlier in the show. Corey Kluber was on with Sean and RJ, and Shippy, I'm going to get to a few cuts here in just a second, but here is bad news for the Cleveland Indians in the Corey Kluber trade. Emmanuel Clase, the main piece in the trade. Delino DeShields was also a solid piece in the trade, Chippy,
too. Worst trade ever.
Worst trade ever, except this sounds like a pretty good trade right now. Emmanuel Clase has a strain to his teres major muscle, which is in your upper back, which connects to your shoulder. So it's kind of a shoulder injury. You can call it back injury, which it is more. If you look at a diagram of the body, it is more in the back, but it does connect to your shoulder. Is he is going to be out most likely 3 months.
Oh.
So he is going to miss the first 2 months of the Major League Baseball season, and they hope that he will be back in late May or early June. So you did trade for a hurt guy in Corey Kluber that is healthy right now. The guy that you were concerned about that might be your future closer, Emmanuel Clase, is now going to be out for 2 months at least of the Indian season.
Wow. All right. And we were just talking yesterday about Rangers, whether they're homegrown, whether they get traded here. They always get hurt. So, I didn't want him to get hurt, but I'm just glad that it's not Kluber who immediately was like, he's out for the year.
Yeah. When I saw that, I was like, wow, I can't believe the main guy. Like, that has to hurt for the Indians. I know that the major reason the Indians made this trade was to get off of salary.
Yeah.
They unfortunately can't get people to show up to Jacobs Field, even through this great run that they had going to the World Series in 15.
Is that odd to you?
It is very odd because when I was with Cleveland, it was a sellout every night.
Do you think because of you?
It was because of me, because I was usually in Akron or Buffalo for most of that time. But they get a new stadium. They get an awesome team going into that new stadium, and the Cleveland Browns leave Cleveland. So they don't have football.
Yeah.
They have a good baseball team for the first time in a long time, and the Cleveland Cavaliers were crudola. They were being led by a 300-pound Sean Kemp at the time.
Yeah.
And the dude Brandon
Knight.
Brandon Knight was on the Cleveland Cavaliers at something at that point, too. But I'm drawing a blank on the little guy that they had that were their two best players. So I remember going to a few of their games going, man, this is some bad talent on this team and some ugly-looking jerseys.
Oh,
okay,
no.
So we won the trade?
So far.
Well, it does help out that our guy's healthy and their guy isn't. Now let's go to Corey Kluber, who was on earlier on the Sean and RJ show. Shippy, I want to go to cut 21 here, and he talks about the injury last season and his road back to pitching for the Texas Rangers this year.
Yeah, it was unfortunate at the time. It was a rough year for me to basically rehab the entire summer, and aside from, I think it was 7 starts, not really be a part of the team, you don't get to go on road trips a lot of times. When the team is at home, you still come in early to do your rehab, then you go home and you come back for the game, and you just kind of miss out on that feeling of being part of the team. So it was tough at the time, but I think looking back on it now, whether it's me making a conscious effort to look at it this way or, I think that it served me well in the sense that it gave my body some time to rest, to really kind of regenerate, that maybe I haven't had that amount of time to do in a while. And it also gave me time to look at what wasn't going well or what I wasn't doing right on the mound and address those issues and kind of put a foundation in place going into this offseason that I think you know, has put me in a good spot right now.
Man, I can't wait to see it. When we're in spring training, we leave Sunday. We will be out there for a week, so we'll be out there next week. I'll tell you what, man, Sean and RJ have crushed it as we're going over who we want to interview.
There's nobody
next
left.
Week. They've interviewed.
I'll see you in Oxnard, sir.
Almost all of the starters on the team this week, and they had an awesome interview with John Daniels.
The starters they think will be the starters.
True.
Let's see if we can change that up.
True, true. Now,
do you think we're going to be able to suggest to Woody that he has somebody else start?
And
that
we their last manager liked us so much, he just came in after the fact, so let's not rule anything out.
And then I want to go to Cut 22, Shippy. This is the Rangers pitching philosophy versus the Indians pitching philosophy. And I do think this is tough to answer for Corey Kluber because so far he's just been part of spring training for a few weeks. It's not like he really knows how it's going to go during the season, but I find this interesting.
You know, when you boil it down to it, pitching is pitching and hitting is hitting. It's there might be different ways to communicate it from one person to another, but I think that, you know, anybody would probably tell you that, you know, you pitch ahead, you pound the strike zone, you put hitters on the defensive. That's the best way to have success. You know, whether one organization says it differently or another one, I think that that's still what it boils down to.
So I love that answer from him, and I'm just going to take not an experience of mine because I know people get tired of my experience of getting shelled in the major leagues, but I did get to play with Tom Glavine, Cy Young winner, great career with the Atlanta Braves, and then I played with him on the New York Mets. And so, remember, he had Leo Mazzoni, he had John Smoltz, he had Greg Maddux. He had some guys, when they put together game plans, I mean, they destroyed you. Not only was it talent, but it was game plans. I do think that under Doug Brokel as the pitching coach, the Rangers really struggled with their game plans against other hitters. And I was like, why are they pitching to the hitter's strengths right here? Which didn't make sense to me. And last year, I thought they did a much better job of that. And I just wonder with Corey Kluber, I think that's going to be what he talked about is all those things are general that every team wants to have. It'll also be, though, for the first time in a while, he'll be having somebody different putting together some game plans for him on how to attack each hitter. He's going to have a lot because he's a veteran guy, just like Tom Glavine had a lot coming over from the Mets. But Tom Glavine missed not having Greg Maddux and John Smoltz and Leo Mazzoni there to also help put together game plans.
So I'm sure we'll have a better gauge on this once you start, you know, seeing what he's at on the gun and everything like that. But just going into it, are you generally optimistic that Corey Kluber can get back a good chunk of what he had? I'm not saying like he's going to win the Cy Young. I'm just like, do you think he can?
As of today, yes. He's not too old. His career shouldn't be over. Now, that being said, if we get done with spring training next week, Kevin, and we come back and he's throwing the ball 87 to 91 miles an hour and we're leaving on March 6th and we're 20 days away, I'm going to say,
nope.
Hey, I can't have that same optimism because right now he's not close to what he was in 2018. But if we're there and we're getting reports that he's 91 to 95 and we see the life on his ball, we see the movement at the end, we see the sinker-slider combination with the rising fastball, I'm going to say, hey, this looks like the Cy Young winner. This looks like the guy that carried the Indians to playoff runs in the World Series in 2015, which could be really exciting. When I talk about putting together game plans, I have a great article here, and it is who could be the comeback player of the year. It ties into Corey Kluber. He did not make the top five list on MLB.com, and I thought he should.
Yeah.
Because if he has a year where he finishes, let's just say, fifth in Cy Young voting, I think he's going to be comeback player of the year. It goes to Chris Davis. Number one on the list is Chris Davis for comeback player of the year in the American League. I want you to listen to this. Last year, Chris Davis, his overall numbers, 220, 23 homers, 73 RBIs. The year before in 2018, 247, 48 homers, 123 RBIs. One of the major things that changed in Chris Davis's season was what he did just against one team, the Texas Rangers. Last year in 2019, he batted 174 against the Texas Rangers. What did he do in 2018? 297.
Whoa.
He had four home runs against the Rangers last year. The year before in 2018, 10 home runs. In his 18 games played against the Rangers, he had 10 home runs. How many RBIs did he have in 2018 against the Rangers? 26. More RBIs than games played against the Texas Rangers. And last year, 13. So last year, all of a sudden, the Rangers pitched him great. They used their fastball up in the zone, out of the zone. They made sure that the breaking ball, instead of saying when it broke, it went down in the down part of the zone or just below the zone, they made sure it bounced. They made sure that it was a little bit outside where he couldn't really reach it. So last year, yes, Minor and Lynn had great years, but you still had three pitchers in the backside, whoever they were, that really struggled. But to me, one of the major things that helped out the Rangers and pitching against a guy like Chris Davis is it seemed like they had a much better game plan for the first time in 3 years against Chris Davis, who struggles against other teams, had never struggled ever against the Texas Rangers, and finally the Rangers started pitching him like a lot of other teams were pitching.
But if they fall apart, he'll be your comeback player.
Yeah, so if the Rangers go back to how they threw against Chris Davis from 16 through 18, then Chris Davis will get back to his 40-plus homers and his 100-plus RBI.
Yay! We're the KNC Masterpiece right here on 105.3 The Fan. Coming up next, Cliff Kingsbury has us wondering, have you ever been fired, and did you know that moment that it was going to happen? Talk about it next right here on The Fan. But before we talk about that, do you know that moment when someone's about to call you to say, hey, how come you haven't paid this bill? Or, hey, are you going to pay this bill? Maybe you just quit answering your phone. Maybe you quit checking your email. Because you know what the vast majority of the calls and emails are going to be about, Corey. So many of our listeners right now, they have been through that. If you have been through that, go to DallasTexasLegal.com or call Mark Rubin at 1-800-LAWYERS.
Yeah, that fear of it never goes away even if you ignore it. Because it's always right there with you. And you know what does help it go away, though? It helps you breathe again. Is getting rid of the debt, making sure it's gone. And you can do that with just one call to Mark Rubin, 1-800-LAWYERS. Don't talk to an out-of-state debt consolidation firm. All right, they're not going to be able to help you the same way that Mark can, because he understands what's going on right here in the DFW area better than anybody you can talk to. He's going to be right there for you. He's a passionate sports fan just like us. He's one of us, man. And that's one of the reasons you see him at our events all the time. You see him out at the Stars game. He's local, and he could help you right now. Call Mark at 1-800-LAWYERS or DallasTexasLegal.com.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.